Excuse me. Is that an Uzi?
Hey, you know, that would make a great TV commercial, wouldn't it? Excuse me, is that an Uzi?
Welcome back to Bad Movies Rule, the worst movie podcast ever recorded. I'm amazed they still let us have this podcast. But maybe today will be the day the podcast police come and break down the studio door, because we're talking about Air America.
It's awesome with the floor moving today. We can almost imagine that there's flak cannons going off right outside of our airplane.
Ladies and gentlemen, we're going to have some turbulence here in the studio today.
There's something going on today. Is it a yoga class above our heads or something?
I think it's a spin class without the spinny things.
There's something.
Yeah. There's this stomp.
It's going to make
they're recording the next episode of Stomp upstairs.
It's going to make it all the more immersive for us to talk about Air America, the greatest movie ever made about Air America.
This is one of my favorites, personally. Yeah. This is my draft pick.
That's right. So, as you heard, Clint Bush is with us this morning, and this is indeed his draft pick.
It's an early one, too. So this is like a round two for me, I think.
Whatever happens, we're going to lay this directly at your feet.
I'll take the heat.
Okay.
I think you can chalk this up as a win.
I'll take the applause and the adulation, all of it.
All right. Well, as you heard, Mel Vandy's also with us, and you're on Team Clint here.
Yes. I'm on Team Air America.
Team Air America. It's not my team. I just found it.
Well, your team is growing by the minute. Also joining us this morning is Ryan Mueller, the host of Living with Liberty, is back again with us since the postman. How are you, sir?
I'm doing well. If I were to categorize this,
yeah,
I would say this is the Seinfeld of movies. It's about nothing.
Perfect.
All right. It sounds like it's going to be...
And it's just as funny.
It's going to be 2v2, I think, today. Well, great, guys. I appreciate that you're all here. And for the listener at home, I appreciate that you're listening. You know, we've been doing this for, we started in May, so it's been a handful of months now, and the podcast continues to grow, and we just want to say that we appreciate that you've been listening. And we're trying to differentiate ourselves in a crowded space, right? There's lots of movie podcasts out there. So it'd be a big help to us if, however you listen to the show, if you could find a way to support it. So whether you can leave a review on the podcast app that you utilize, if it allows for that, great. If you can share it on social media, if you can tell a friend about it, whatever you can do to support the show and help us get out there, we would very much appreciate it. And again, we thank you for listening. If you'd like to connect with the show, the best way to connect with us, to offer suggestions, to tell us how terrible we are, you can send an email directly to thisshowistrash@gmail.com. And then every once in a while, we're going to throw a mailbag episode together and we'll read your emails live on the show.
Recorded.
Live recorded. Yes.
One thing not to do to contact us, however.
It just sounds better to say live.
Don't like wrap the name in a piece of paper around a rock and throw it to people's windows. Don't do that.
That's why we made the email address.
Right.
So that the hate mail wouldn't be literally thrown through our windows.
It was right. Just that one guy, though.
Right. That's why we made it.
Well, right. Bob.
Thanks, Bob. Oh, yeah, please. And any hate mail for Bob, we're still trying to collect. So that would be great.
We need it for his Christmas present.
All right, well, let's get the vitals out of the way so that I can get to... I'm really interested to hear what your overall impressions are of the movie, but let's lay out all of the details here for this film. This is, as we said, Air America, 1990. And he was directed by... This guy's got a fun name to say. Roger Spottiswood. You know who this guy is?
Negative.
No.
Okay.
Guy with a fun last name?
This guy... Listen to this... trio. This movie, Air America, was sandwiched right between two other movies that made for maybe one of the greatest triple plays in American director history.
All right, let's do this.
Right before Air America, this guy directed Turner and Hooch, the all-time cinematic classic.
Okay.
That's a good one.
Turner and Hooch. Then Air America. Then he followed that up. Stop or My Mom Will Shoot.
Nice.
These are so good. What happened classic. In that middle one?
There's nothing wrong with the middle one.
I feel like Stop or My Mom Will Shoot is one of those movies that's just destined to be on this podcast someday.
Sure.
That Stallone and Estelle Getty classic.
She washed the bluing off his gun. Yeah. That's a great one.
Well, the most important thing that this guy did was probably he directed an Arnold Schwarzenegger movie, so that'll be the peak of his career. You guys ever see The Sixth Day?
No. Nobody did.
Everybody saw that knows what movies are.
Nobody saw that.
All right, fire.
I stopped at The Fifth Element.
The Sixth Day was just this movie where Arnold clones himself, and they literally have a conversation at one point. It's great. That's the only thing I remember about it.
Conversations. Good
yes.
for movies.
Yes.
The movie was written by John Eskow and Richard Rush. Probably the only thing you'd recognize John from. He wrote Mask of Zorro, which was the reboot of Zorro starring
Antonio Banderas
and Anthony Hopkins and Catherine Zeta-Jones. This movie starred Mel Gibson, Robert Downey Jr., Nancy Travis, and a ton of those guys.
Oh, yeah.
That guy especially.
Right?
Yes. Yeah.
There's tons of those guys. What were some of those guys that you saw? Not their actual names, but the guy from, do you remember what any of these guys were from?
Nope.
Yes.
Wasn't paying attention.
Coach from, League of Their Own? Or no, what was it?
There was the guy from Scrubs. Okay, right?
Yeah, Not that guy. The other one.
There's the guy from My Cousin Vinny.
Yeah.
The guy that played the prosecutor in My Cousin Vinny. There's the guy from Field of Dreams. The dude from Total Recall that had the Quaid thing coming out of his stomach, right? Was one of the pilots. The guy that played Weird Al's buddy in UHF was in the movie. And then the guy that General Song was Kato from the Pink Panther movies.
Nice.
So there's just tons of those guys in this movie. This movie had a budget of $35 million.
Planes are expensive.
Yeah, fuel.
Yeah, opium.
Oh, I was just going to say.
Opium poppies.
Poppy farms. Well, they did have Robert Downey Jr. in this movie, so I'm sure an opium was part of the budget.
There was an opium budget, definitely.
This wasn't what put him on that track then.
Well, maybe.
Well, and he is a method actor, so I'm sure that they were flying actual heroin.
That's right. I'm sorry, I'm just not able to get into the right headspace for this scene. Can we get some actual heroin in here?
So those weren't sacks of flour then?
No. On a $35 million budget, it actually made money. It made $57 million, so it made a decent profit, $22 million. That's not the reason it's on this podcast. Here's the reason it's on this podcast.
Because it has 14 plots and none of them really gel together for a movie.
Yes.
Critics hated it.
It's at a 5.8. It's a sub-6 right now on IMDb.
Perfect. That's above half.
And no, it's not perfect. That's bad.
And if it was any higher, we wouldn't be here.
At 13% on Rotten Tomatoes right now.
That is a badge of honor right there.
Well, okay, the audience score is still like 30-35%.
Right. What do audiences know?
Yeah.
A movie's got to be liked by one. If the critics you're going to win some awards, even if the people hate it. If the critics hate it but the people love it, then it's a cult classic. This has none of that.
Well, it'll happen.
And I don't understand why.
Hey, maybe after this show.
Okay. All right. I got it. I got to find out. Clint, and since it's your draft pick, you're going to go first. Tell me your overall impressions of me. What is it you love so much about this film?
It's just nonstop. It's like it's not a comedy, but it's really funny. Like it was, I thought all the interactions between the people were actually quite humorous and funny. And I enjoyed that. I don't know. I just thought that I like the actors that are in it. Mad Max. Iron Man? How can this fail?
I heard you acknowledge a minute ago that there's 14 plots that go nowhere.
Absolutely. There isn't like a setup straight. There is, but there isn't like a setup straight. Here is absolutely where we're going with no side turns. Mm-hmm. This is all side turns.
Okay.
But it's...
So it's more the relational, the comedy between the characters that makes you love
absolutely.
It.
Absolutely.
Okay. All right. Well, Ryan, how about you? What are your overall... Is this the first time you'd ever seen it?
Yeah, I think it was. I thought when we had talked, I said I'd seen it, but then I got into it. Yeah, I hadn't seen this one.
Okay, so coming in fresh, what did you think?
You know, so I was at a hockey game down by O'Hare last night. I would have rather watched 2 hours of planes taking off than this thing.
Well, isn't that kind of 2 hours of planes taking off was this movie, wasn't it?
It was, and you know what? There's probably heroin on those planes taking off at O'Hare, too. Oh my I don't gosh. Know.
Trace amounts anyway.
Oh, all of these guys ended up becoming pilots at O'Hare when in their retirement. So anyway,
they had to go somewhere. Right. I think there's some movies where you can have multiple plots that go nowhere and it works. Mm-hmm. I did, you know, there wasn't too much of the humor in there to make that happen for me in this movie.
I got you.
I think, you know, I was real excited because it's, you know, Mel Gibson. I think Mel Gibson's a great actor. He's got a lot of kind of depth and breadth to what he can do. And wasn't feeling it. Definitely wasn't his best work, I don't think, in this one. And then, you know, Robert Downey Jr., I didn't get enough of the snark from him that you typically get, right? I like the scene where he's harassing the truck driver, and then after that, it's like he almost goes to, like, good guy and is astonished at their running the dope game.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, yeah.
No, I was excited to see Mel. Like, this is our first movie with Mel, so, yeah, no, I agree. Mel? Speaking of Mel's.
For Mel's everywhere, it's good to see representation in film. I will say, yes, the entire movie is a cluster F, but anything dealing with the government is pretty much a cluster F.
Dead on, you know, hey.
Yes, complete incompetence.
The government's got this going on over here. They go and recruit a guy who's obviously already a screw up.
Right.
And like you say, there's not enough snarkiness with him. I think that just goes to underscore the fact he's like, hey, you know, in LA, I'm the weirdest guy in the room. Yeah, I come over here and everybody's more effed up than I am.
I think for me, this is, on paper, it looks like it can't lose, right? You've got Mel Gibson at the height of his powers, right? This is like right after Lethal Weapon 2. He's going to step after this into a bunch of other classic movies like Braveheart and Ransom. Oh, man, love that movie. But he's kind of sleepwalking through this movie. Then you get Robert Downey Jr., the two of them together. Why wouldn't this? But he almost seems like a different person then, like pre-crisis, than he does now. It's like almost like he found his voice afterwards, and now he's got his, like, RDJ thing that he does. And he's like, he really is biting and snarky and really good at that, but he hadn't really discovered that yet. So there are, like, moments in the movie where, I kind of see the future Robert Downey Jr., like, in there, but I don't know. To me, it was like I was worried this was going to be, like, the Steve Miller Band of movies. Like, it's not bad enough to be funny, but it's also, like, not good enough to care about, like, for me personally.
Like background music?
Yeah, kind of. Like Like what's this movie trying to be? It's doesn't
perfect for the way I watch movies.
Is it?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Little bits here and there on paying attention, know it all, stuff like that. I mean, I don't know. Maybe it's just the way I watch movies, and I want to watch for entertainment and to wind down. I do not want to immerse myself in this story.
Well, that's all I'm trying to do is figure out what version of this movie works, right? Because I don't think it works as a comedy, like as a broad studio comedy.
That's what I'm saying. It's not a comedy, and it's not a serious.
It doesn't work as a period, right, like a war piece, or you know. Right. So maybe it works. Because
there was no war in Laos.
Maybe it works.
There was, but we weren't there.
They weren't there. Well, that's right.
In fact, we're not even having this conversation.
No,
right now.
We're not.
Well, it may not have happened for you, Mel.
Maybe it works as an aviation picture, and I think the movie that does work within, you know, what is there, is maybe like you said, like a hangout movie. Like it's the kind of movie where you're spending 2 hours hanging out with these characters, so it's more like you can enjoy it for that, and then maybe that's the only way it works. I don't know.
Especially when you look at all the scenes separately, each one of those little story scene, like you said, the Seinfeld of, and I never even put it to that way. I was like, yeah, absolutely. It's all these little scenes that are funny goings on that aren't really a whole together as an actual movie, but a good put together of, hey, these characters' interaction between in a timeline that actually makes sense with itself.
Yeah.
So that part I enjoyed.
Well, here's the question. When you're watching this, were you actually hooked? I mean, were you interested in what happened, or did you kind of blow it off?
I watched it twice, and I think both times.
You watched it a second time?
I did, because I like to go back and maybe try and catch stuff I didn't catch the first time around. I wasn't necessarily hooked. I think the hangout movie, that's probably a good way to put it. You put it on as background noise, and
everybody turns and looks when he's shooting iguanas on the freaking golf course.
I thought that was hilarious. That was funny. That was a funny part.
It's those moments. Yep. Hey, wake him up. I got to take him to work. You know, that's a great moment. They fly him through.
I think it needed more of those moments, though, to work.
Perhaps.
Here's the thing. People are all over the board on this movie. Okay. I printed out, these are real reviews, okay, from regular people. These are not from critics. This is from off of IMDb. This is a...
Who's the first one?
Bad review. Okay.
Who's the first review from?
I don't know. I didn't put the person's name in here.
Oh, I hate him. Nobody likes that guy.
So listen to this. This is just the gamut of opinions you get here. This movie has been stapled to the wall of a chapel as proof that God is truly dead. Am I the only one that really saw, rather sleptwalked through this film? This is the only movie I've ever seen in the theater that I regret not walking out on and demanding my money back. And I even saw Highlander 2, The Quickening.
This guy's a douche. Straight up.
From beginning to end, Gibson and Downey have absolutely no chemistry as two unlikelies cast together by circumstance who eventually work together as best buds.
That's been my entire life.
That's kind of how things go.
The action, what little there is goofy and it's dull as the skull bone of a writer. It's never heard somebody call the skull bone before. Thank whatever deity is chortling down at us as it observes our cinema that there's no chance for an Air America 2. 1 out of 10.
This guy is trying so hard to be hardcore. I guarantee he lives in his mother's basement and owns nothing but an Xbox.
I was just going to say, sounds like a Hot Pocket eating basement dweller to me.
Yeah. He's clown shoes.
He just literally compared it to The Quickening. Highlander 2 is a terrible movie. Here's a good review. Yeah. Good review. I like the bit where they dangle the bloke at the end of the rope. 10 out of 10.
Yep.
There you go.
We already talked about that scene here.
I did like that scene. Yeah. And he's doing like yoga or dancing or whatever.
Well, at first he's like startled and hey, ask you know?
My favorite one I saw. One sentence, 10 out of 10.
Perfect. I mean, it's to the point.
I don't know about the 10 out of 10 part. I feel like the one sentence.
Well, let's jump in, guys. Let's just go right into this movie, and we'll walk through, and then hopefully by the end, either me and Ryan will have gained a better appreciation for it, or you will have realized how terrible this is. Or nothing will change, which is probably far more likely. But this movie has this opening credit sequence. Now, I'm happy that you're here, Mel, because Mel is himself a rookie. Can I say rookie pilot? Is that accurate?
Okay. Yeah.
How long have you been taking lessons for?
About what my bank account can afford.
Okay.
So
15 minutes.
Yeah.
How many hours?
No, I got about 14 hours.
Okay. So pretty new still.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
But you've flown.
Yes.
And you know a lot about planes and military and all that stuff.
Yep.
Okay. So do you know what kind of plane that is in the beginning, that opening sequence that's flying through the big, giant, big-bellied silver plane?
Yes.
What is it?
It's an airplane.
Okay. That's super helpful. No,
a C-123 provider, actually.
Okay, C-123.
It's a two-engine version of the C-130.
Yeah. Gotcha. So in the opening sequence,
yes,
a farmer takes one shot.
Possibly.
And yep. Brings down the C-123.
Possibly. Absolutely.
Is it possible?
Absolutely possible. Yes. Unlikely? Absolutely. Possible? Yes.
So planes are hard to hit with rifles.
Well, yeah, that's what I'm saying.
A plane with a rifle and an engine,
Planes are not bulletproof.
Right.
We're not talking combat planes here. We're talking thin-skinned metal on the outside. I mean, it's a tin can.
Okay.
You can't shoot the engine. You can't hurt the engine. The engine can start on fire. The engine can pop the wing. Fuel tanks.
Which are full of fuel, by the way.
There you go.
All the wings, the empty space in the wing, it's full of fuel.
So yes, it's possible. Unlikely, absolutely, but it's a story. Keep going.
So from what I understand, this is the golden BB that the guy's freaking out about through the whole movie, right?
No, that's no. The golden BB is flak.
Is flak, that big black poof.
Okay, so from what my half-assed internet research told me, like that is the single golden BB is just the single random shot that, you know, takes down your plane, like, you know, the one in a million shot.
Right.
Like as demonstrated in the beginning of the movie. So maybe it's not. I'm just saying this is just what I looked up and read. But I wasn't, I mean, just immediately off the bat, I was like, I'm interested to know if it was really possible. And you're saying it is.
Absolutely.
So I'm learning something already.
Planes crash all the time, from minor fuel leaks to
bird strikes.
I mean, a bird will kill your engine.
Right.
You hit something. So
what would you say the degree of difficulty of a shot with a plane traveling? How fast is that thing probably going? A couple hundred miles an hour?
172 to 200 knots.
All right. And then you got a farmer with a gun that's probably, you know, the sights are off, I'm guessing, on that thing.
He had a muzzle loader or something.
Right. That's what I'm saying. To hit that shot with the plane going.
Good lead.
You know.
You got lead at 2 football fields estimated for a jet and 1 football field for a prop plane.
Okay.
So about 100 yards in front of it. And
we'll sign that guy up because that was
really... And then he walked away all cool and calm and collected.
And the plane wasn't very high off the ground. I mean, it was only...
Right. You didn't see the 500 feet. Planes he shot one shot at and missed, though. I mean...
Got it. The one thing I will say during this opening credit sequence, which is basically this plane flying around, dropping off, you know, sacks of rice through people's ceilings.
That was less... Yeah.
And stuff.
Useful. That's not helpful. Thanks for the rice.
Here's some rice. Jerk. Your house is destroyed. Build a new hut, but you'll be full while you're doing
it. That's why the farmers want to shoot at him.
But the soundtrack of this movie was actually really good. And that's awesome. the first thing.
Yeah. I wrote down the best part of this movie was the soundtrack.
Yeah, that's, right?
Probably 20% of the budget for the film.
Well, that's what I was thinking as I'm watching. It's like, expensive. Man, how much did this cost? Because Free Ride was the first song during that opening sequence, right?
And
it fits.
Rescue Me and...
Yeah, there's a bunch of them.
Stuff.
So that was really, really good.
No Fortunate Son, though.
No.
Because we had helicopters without Fortunate Son.
It's such a cliche at this point, though. I almost feel like...
It's prescribed. I mean, you have to.
They shouldn't have been allowed to finish this movie without putting it in there, right?
That's why the critics hated it.
That could be...
Not enough Fortunate Son.
That might have just got it right to six. Right there.
Would have changed the trajectory of this whole thing.
It may have been there, but got cut in the budget.
Yeah, so the movie starts with a horrible plane crash and death.
Yep.
From this character.
Basically. Yeah.
Yeah. Which also is one of the only times in the movie I laughed out loud.
Yeah.
Well, if he's not dead, he's real calm.
Well, that wasn't even it. It was, here's this guy's body, and it's laying in such a way that it's just like, yeesh, right? And the guy runs up, is he dead?
Yeah.
That just shows you how clueless government is.
American intelligence.
Please do not use the terms American intelligence. Rob, I wish you wouldn't use the words
American intelligence to describe what you do.
Oh, look, you guys are laughing because the movie was awesome. I hate you.
I'm
glad I made you drive to Milwaukee last week for nothing.
So I guess, before I ask that question, I want to get all the chess pieces into Laos, right? And so... We've established that Mel Gibson is this, you know, devil-may-care pilot. Obviously, he's cracking jokes while this plane is burning on the tarmac and seems like he doesn't want to be there at all. And it cuts directly then to Robert Downey Jr. in a helicopter in Los Angeles.
Doing the news.
Yep. The traffic report.
Yeah.
I still love his rendition of that song. And I legitimately, every time I hear it on the radio, I give his falsetto too damn hard.
Can you give it to us now?
Yeah.
Too damn hard.
I mean, I have to. I absolutely
love
that part. I have to.
Yeah.
I don't know what it is. That one, since I saw this movie when I was a kid, we're talking 30 years ago.
12?
Yeah.
11?
Yeah,
this is darn near 30 years ago. I bet I saw it on VHS, so we'll call it 29 years I've been making that song wrong because of this movie, and that's awesome.
That's right. It's the little things like that is what I pull from films all the time. Yeah. Absolutely. And like I've said 100 times, I feel like on this podcast, whether you like a movie or not has as much to do with when you saw it.
Yeah.
Yes.
As whether it's any good or not.
Yes.
And if you saw it when you were 11 years old, that probably has a lot to do with why you love it.
Yeah.
And if I had seen it then, I might love it too. Right.
Potentially.
Look at The Big Lebowski.
Oh, dude.
I hated that movie the first time I saw it. I absolutely love it now.
Yeah. I believe it. It's
we're no longer brothers.
Catch it at the right time.
It happens.
But here's my question. Has anybody ever, I mean, before he even sees the traffic jam or the semi there, he's like real low for a traffic copter.
Yeah. They're showing how reckless he is. And
that's why.
Because he's flying like right above these cars.
Yeah, he's like 250 feet.
Yeah. Well, and then he has an argument. So he sees a semi blocking and pulls right up to have a conversation with the guy.
I saw that. I was like,
You can't scream.
I like
it
where this movie's going right now.
Right.
I mean, here he is. He's chastising his truck driver for blocking the line. And the truck driver, the truck driver's being an idiot.
Oh, absolutely.
And pushing people to the shoulder.
And he's sitting there just, right.
Well, it just shows, I almost forgot like what era this took place in, because when it came up on the guy, like just watching the accident, I was like expecting him to be filming it with his phone, but he's just sitting there looking at it, right?
Right.
Because if it had been now, that's what would have been happening.
He was taking a mental picture.
Right. So he could tell people later?
Right.
What is that about traffic accidents that everybody has to slow down? What are we trying to see?
They want to see what happened so that they can tell other people.
Now people drive by like this.
Yeah. Well, I know.
And then rear end the car in front of them.
Why, though? What's the fascination?
People are stupid.
See, he's saying, like, Robert Downey Jr.'s character in the movie says it's because people want to see a fatality or a dead body or something. When I drive past an accident, I'll admit I'm curious to see what happened, but I try and keep it speedy. But I'm definitely not trying to catch a body.
I'm not blocking two lanes to try and see what's going on.
No.
While the ambulance is trying to get there.
People like to see stuff they don't normally see.
Is that all it is?
Think about Stand By Me. That's the entire plot.
Hey, you guys want to go see a dead body?
Right.
Yeah, I guess.
So for some people, that's their excitement as they're driving to their 9-to-5 or driving their truck, you know, doing meth and all the other stuff. And
right.
You know, that's their action film right there.
I will say the coolest thing I drove by on my way to work one time was going down 94 on the tollway and the toll plaza at Waukegan Toll Plaza. There was a van that was upside down inside the toll booth lane. Like it had pulled up, like it had pulled up to give its change. That's where it was. It was right in front of the booth, but upside down.
Can you imagine that guy? He probably had to flick the change up.
It's just like, I want to know.
Down, actually.
The toll workers out there outside the window just picking up the change. And
the guy reached over to grab his quarters. And
I'm just like, I want to just go. I want to know how this happened. It ended up perfectly upside down.
He preset his change on the dash. And then when he had to step on the brakes, it fell into the defroster vents, and it was the only way to get it out, or he wouldn't have been able to get through the toll.
I mean, 40 cents was 40 cents.
We got to flip this thing.
Was this pre or post iPass? Because it could have been 80 cents.
Oh, gosh. It was a long time ago.
Waukegan Toll Plaza has been closed for years. For those that care about the Illinois toll system.
That's right.
It was supposed to go away many years ago.
It was. All right. So here's the funny thing. He pulls up this helicopter and has an argument live on air with the truck. And so the radio stations does, I think, the right thing and fires him.
But that had nothing to do with the radio station. No, the FAA pulled his ticket. Yeah, he got his pilot's license.
Oh, that's right. That's right. The FAA pulled his license. And
probably great for radio ratings.
Well, I was just thinking of the fact that his boss seemed to be a little bit panicky that they were dropping F-bombs live on the air.
It's only 5,000 and each occurrence.
But he's recruited by the CIA and in Laos within 10 minutes of this movie.
Yes.
Like, perfect.
Immediately.
He looked tired on that plane, too. Like, he just went from couch to Laos. Like that.
Like that. Like, boom. Which is fine. I appreciate movies not wasting time and, like, let's get them. You know, let's get all the chess pieces on the board.
We should have sat there for the 16-hour flight. I think that would have been better film.
But
like 24,
I'm amazed how the CIA was so on top of him at the time that he had gotten. Well,
we don't
fired.
Know how on top. Like I said, how on top all that is. I know he's got the letter in the mail. He did not get his FAA license in the mail revoked the next day after this incident.
Right.
No, incident. That's weeks.
But they had already showed that it's like the worst part is we need more of these pilots. You know, these pilots are crazy. We need our nut jobs. We need more of them. Well, that shows you that we're trying to find pilots with a moral compass that maybe not exactly straight.
Yeah.
A little insane, want to come do this, not in the military already. So they're recruiting. They found, here's a guy without a license. He's an action junkie. Let's get after him, you know?
Fair enough.
So who knows how much time was literally spent in the movie, but it definitely...
Yeah.
They probably just waited for the FAA to, you know...
Well, regardless, he's...
Cancellations.
He's in Laos, and here's the question that I wanted to ask before. What do any of us actually know about what was going on over there, the Air America
thing? Nothing was going on over there. It didn't happen.
Well, I mean, seriously, because this was a real thing, right?
Yes. And I actually know I read the book many years ago.
Okay.
Yes.
So this was in Laos, not in Vietnam.
Correct.
But, so was there a secret war going on in Laos?
There was a civil war going on in Laos.
Civil war.
Yes.
But was there a secret war that the Americans were involved in?
We can't answer that.
I'm at,
yes. Yes. Okay. The Americans were providing supplies and they were backing certain warlords.
Gotcha. From what I was able to gather again with my 5 minutes of internet research, there are some that claim this movie is a total work of fiction.
Potentially.
There's a lot of fiction in it,
there's nothing wrong with that.
But was this kind of stuff actually happening, do you think?
Yes.
Somewhat, yeah. Was there an actual government plot to frame its pilots so that the other people...
That's not what I meant.
Yeah, but I'm saying that part is probably more fiction than anything. But were they actually running back and forth on these supply redrops? I'd have to be willing to say yes.
Yes, they were running guns, you know, for local warlords and stuff. They were, you know, the drug trade thing.
That's really the thing I'm asking, because they make the comment later in the movie. It says that no one's ever won a war in this area of the world without controlling the opium trade.
Well, because that's your money.
That's where all the money is there. Yeah.
It's their greatest export.
So is this the kind of stuff that is happening in these conflicts that America and I know we're getting serious here for a comedy podcast, but you know, are they getting knee deep in the drug trade in these countries when they're in there doing this stuff?
It's happening in Afghanistan.
Yeah.
I would have to assume really? It has to
yes.
be.
This just shows how ignorant I am of this
stuff.
That's
why you have these entire, again, and it wasn't that, but you know, have these entire like Three Kings movies, all these other movies where, hey, this happens and this stuff goes missing. Well, where does it go? All of that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. I mean, somebody is doing something while they're there, and who are the people with the power to make it happen?
There's an element of truth to some of what's in this movie, just because of, you know, especially with the CIA's going into really get on the ground with some of these warlords to help our own effort, right? So, and whatever that takes is what they do.
Now, if we as the American people would pay our fair share in actual taxes, what we should be paying, then they wouldn't have to do this kind of stuff. But since we don't, they do.
All right. Reduce the size of our government.
Well, I do. I try and avoid. I tried.
Did I do that?
I try and avoid getting political on this show.
My other podcast. I'm going to stay on that one
at all costs. So we're going to move right along.
Was that me?
We're going to move right along.
Firing that flak in the air.
I just set that on the tee and see what happens.
Golden BB.
He gets over to Laos and he's introduced, he walks kind of into this first meeting. And so this is the first of many times we are introduced to this morning huddle thing that these pilots are doing. And essentially what I gather is their job is they wake up every morning and they're told, this is what you're flying today. This is the plane or the chopper. And this is what you're transporting. And here's the route that you're taking.
Yeah.
And that's their job.
It's kind of like a taxi stand.
Yeah. It's dangerous because depending upon which route you get, you might get shot at.
Right.
Right?
Right.
And their people are, you know, getting killed. I mean, they just lost a pilot at the beginning of the movie. I don't know how often that happens, but it's a pretty dangerous job.
Twice in the length of this movie.
Right.
So,
yes.
And so what do you guys think of the guy that the commander, not the guy from Scrubs, but the like Weasley dude that said, is he dead at the beginning?
Yeah, Rob?
Rob, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, he's your typical incompetent government employee.
Agreed. Plain
simple.
He was pretty ridiculous all the way through.
He had some pretty terrible ideas, like about the screaming on the tapes.
Yep. Yeah.
Right?
And the giant condoms.
Yeah. So,
the propaganda war.
But
that goes to show you how ridiculous everybody thought the stupid propaganda drops were in the first place.
That is another time I actually laughed in this movie when he's like, all right, we'll just drop these giant condoms.
See, penis size is really important to...
And they'll be so terrified. They'll be so terrified. They'll lay down. They'll lay down their guns. It's the most ridiculous thing. And what was with the screaming that if they just... They just think we're crazy or something?
The sounds of war.
The sounds of war?
They'll be so upset they won't want to fight in it.
Yeah. This is your typical CIA guy that is thinking way too hard about some of these things.
But you've got entire think tanks coming up with these ideas.
This is American intelligence.
This is exactly. These are people that sit there and they're like, let's try this. This will work. And it doesn't.
No. Well, I don't think either of those ideas would have worked.
No. Well, the condom thing, maybe.
The other thing that was interesting is he's getting his tutorial into the system is Mel Gibson's walking him around. He's like, and we're flying these planes. These aren't even legal in the U.S. And then he shows this, like, I don't know, plane that looks like every propeller plane I've ever seen in my life.
No. They're all legal.
That was
looked like a little Cessna or something.
So I'm like, this looks like a regular airplane. What's not legal about this?
It was a Pilatus PC-6 Porter.
Okay. When that was not illegal?
Not illegal. No, it's a short takeoff and landing plane.
You can land on the side of a mountain uphill.
You can land on the side of the mountain, you could take off.
So that was legit when he landed on that side of that mountain like that.
Yeah, there's a couple places like that.
See, this is why I wish I could have watched it with you, because there's so many times in this movie I'm like, no.
I only invited him over to watch it like 7 times.
It turns out that a lot of the stuff I thought was not possible is totally possible.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, no, I thought that was
wrong.
Pretty good.
See, okay.
And I know we're going to discuss it later, but his ditching the airplane and hiding it, completely plausible as well.
All right, well, we'll get to that.
Although they would have had to get out to bring the wing sections in way earlier
right.
than shown.
Well, the we're basically, you know, he's the surrogate for the audience at this point, right? The audience is being introduced to the operation at the same time that Robert Downey Jr. is, so we can understand everything that's going on.
Is this a trope? The whole introducing everybody to everything.
No, I think it's
a new guy.
I don't know if it's a trope. I think it's just a function of screenwriting and how you have to, you know, bring the audience into the moment. You know,
I think the timing was good on that.
Yeah. You
got new guy coming in, audience coming in. What are we doing?
Yeah. I think
I'll allow it.
At this point, they bring in the Senator Davenport.
They were going to have to cancel the movie if you didn't.
Senator Davenport, who is the, as I said, the guy from My Cousin Vinny, the guy that played the prosecutor. Comes in and he's this, again, everyone from the government is not really portrayed in a great light in Air America.
I think that's the point.
Yeah.
why did you not find
this? Why do you think he wrote the book?
Have you not been watching CNN? C-SPAN?
He comes in and he's, you know, basically thinks that the warlord general is like a baggage porter, and is like, tries to hand him his bag. He talks to him in broken English.
I chuckled at that one. That was pretty good, I thought.
Yeah, I think
this movie had its moments.
No, it had its moments.
This guy's a moron. That's funny.
The only thing that would have made it better at the end of that, if he had like spoken Spanish to him or something, like, lo siento or something.
No, he did. He said no tipo or something.
No tip, right. Oh, but then at the end, after he realized it would have been even funnier if they'd put a button on it and he'd said, lo sientos or something, you know, like,
well, like how General Sung threw in there. Do you hand De Gaulle your bags too or whatever?
Oh yeah, that's right.
Good stuff.
Next we have Robert Downey Jr. takes his first flight, you know, his which we get the scene with the Uzi, which I thought
that was fantastic.
Yeah. One of my top lines of the movie,
which was what?
Excuse me, is that an Uzi? Hey, you know what would make a great TV commercial, wouldn't it? Excuse me, is that an Uzi? Well, yes, it is. Hey, self-defense is no laughing matter. That's why when it comes to number one, I pack an Uzi, except no substitutes.
It's a fantastic...
It is.
Especially because they're talking about the logbook, too, at the same time. Right. So it's not even like the front and center conversation. It's perfectly written.
It's side action.
It's good. It's good. And I like, this is where we meet Babbo, right? Their older buddy. And here's what I don't understand about the scene. What the hell is going on with the coloring?
They're like, it just shows you that they're insane.
Yeah,
you know? We've got some time off.
Yeah, he's coloring a puppy, man. It just shows how crazy.
Last time I crazy you color,
you got the less weird all. Guy.
All right, hold on. You're both talking at the same time. You
let's
stop.
All three talk same time.
Yes.
Ready?
My goodness. Go ahead.
I was just saying, it shows how crazy they are. He's coloring a puppy. He screwed up the sky the last time. He's and then you've got just to show that. Yeah, Robert Downey Jr. is the less weird guy. He's the one still flying the plane.
It just was totally out of left field.
But that's why I said it at the same time, because that was the whole scene. It's like he's trying to ask for pertinent, actual information. Like, hey, we just almost hit that peak at 3,900 feet. Right, are there any higher peaks in this area?
I told you not
to
use
blue. Stop bothering me when I'm coloring. You
know, yeah, there are. Now let me get back to my coloring.
But they never go back to it at all. It was just like a one and done, totally random thing.
Perfect.
Well, maybe they only do it.
Well, they never actually flew together again as an orientation. They were now all separate on their own.
I guess I just started asking this question right around this point in the movie, and I kept asking, where is this going? Where is any of this going? Yep. Right? There is not really a plot that carries this movie forward. There's all kinds of things that happen within the film that really don't end up coming anywhere or serve to move it forward or the ball down the field in any way, shape, or form.
Almost to me like it's more of a supposed to be a faux documentary. You know what I mean? Like this is literally just the days in this, you know, this is the month of the life of these people go.
Could be.
A series of short flights.
Yes.
Each individual plot kind of takes the role of one of the flights.
Okay.
That's why it's scatterbrained kind of everywhere.
It is kind of scatterbrained because I feel like it just jumps all over the place, right? Like right after this, we're at the whorehouse and
with your girlfriend,
but it's not even his girlfriend.
I know, but
right.
That was funny.
Nancy Travis is in this movie who I love. I love Nancy Travis.
I do too.
She serves almost no purpose in this movie.
She is my trash can nomination.
Except to have somebody to rescue her at the end.
Right.
Right. I mean, that's literally the only every scene she's in. She's like a background, plus she's like a set dressing, you know, and then it's like at the end, oh, she's in trouble, we need to go rescue her. That's it. That's the only thing she has. I mean, she's not really a part of this movie at all,
right? served zero purpose.
And it was, yeah, and it was like the refugee camp was like one of those undeveloped things. It was just there. Right.
It was just there.
Maybe it was the front to the poppy fields. Who knows?
I mean, who knows?
But here's, you brought that up too, and I'm going to skip way forward here. If you've got General Soon's troops being moved in on by another rival warlording gang, yeah, whatever they are, and they're fighting at each other, and hey, look, a plane coming in. They don't know it's full of weapons. They don't know it's to pick up people. Nobody shot at the plane.
Yeah.
Not once.
It's the only time.
Nobody shot at that plane while it was sitting on the ground.
Well, when we get there, I'll explain why, because I have a theory about this.
All right, go.
I have a theory about this.
Well, she did radio for any planes right. to come help to
no, she did.
Refugees. Right, right. She absolutely. Did. But she, yeah.
But once it was,
but how did
once it was there,
not know, they right. not
they're listening.
We'll get into that. At this point in the movie, like I said, we're jumping around all over the place, right? We were at the whorehouse, then they go to the Pepsi plant. And we realize that they're making heroin at the Pepsi plant. Where suddenly we're playing.
Too bad it wasn't Coke.
Yeah, that would have made more sense.
Would have made more sense.
We're playing drunken mini golf. It's like it's just like it all seems like it's not going anywhere. And I enjoy the scenes like as a scene individually. I'm like, okay, they're playing mini golf. The guy, first of all, I would never want to play mini golf with him. He's like shooting up the mini golf course.
He seems like a pretty good shot, though. I mean, he missed one-handed. That. He did miss that little lizard or gecko.
He missed, was, yeah, but then like he's trying to shoot the ball and he's shooting up the.
That's hard.
You know,
it's his golf ball's course, moving.
Right. I understand, but like now we can't use this anymore because you shot it up. This guy's unhinged.
It's mini golf. It's extra.
That's the wrong on mini golf.
The guy just seemed like he was totally overboard and unhinged.
Yeah. SCI yes. liked him, though.
Yeah. Jack Neely.
Yeah.
Was,
I liked him.
Was great.
I liked him.
He was great. His character's all over the map, too, right? Like that, you know, we go from that, we're like, okay, this guy's a total psychopath. And then the next day, he seems like a totally normal, reasonable dude. Yeah.
Well, he wasn't drinking.
Right.
These guys were hammered out of their mind on that golf course.
Absolutely.
And then they just wake up in the morning and everybody's like, all right, cool. Well,
except Robert Downey Jr. With the helicopter. Well, yeah,
this is what happens next. This is what happens next. So he hovers over him. The next morning, Robert Downey Jr. is asleep and he flies over him with a helicopter.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And he's not awake.
So he's not a light sleeper.
I feel you fly a chopper up on top of somebody, they're going to wake up.
There's a difference between sleeping and passed out.
And there's a difference between people that are around aircraft all the time and people that have never had a chopper over them.
All right. So you think he didn't wake up till he was flying through the air. He was still asleep, being lifted off the ground by a helicopter.
I got to give him credit, though. They tied a perfect knot. They had a bowline on him. Spot on.
Well, apparently he actually did the stunt.
There you go.
Like it was a real, deal. He like flew him around on the end of this rope. It was amazing to me.
I thought the part where he actually went upside down and put his legs together around the rope was kind of risky because, you could slip out of that little thing he had. So he had to have some other type of harness that wasn't just the rope around him.
Oh, I'm sure they secured him in, three different ways, but I'm just saying cool.
Yeah, because I thought that, too, because it's like, ooh, it just right up.
Like, all right, you're hooked under the arms. Okay, cool. But then when he flipped over upside down, I was like, that's how you fall out of that knot.
Yeah.
No, it's not.
That would have been a very interesting end to the movie there.
Just over.
Yeah, so as far as I can understand, the only plot of this movie that is trying to move it forward is this idea of the drug ring, right? It's the retired major, actually, I don't even remember his character name, the guy from Scrubs, the retired major, and Bob, right?
Yep.
And then the General Song are trying to move this heroin under the nose of the senator who is there to kind of scope things out. Here's what I don't understand. Are the pilots aware this is happening? Because it doesn't seem like they are.
Right. We have the actually they're not. The pilots aren't aware that they're actually doing that, but they are aware. They think it is, but they're not positive when, where, or who has it.
Because so they're not complicit.
You just don't ask questions.
Neely said, "Opium, go home now." We know, go home now. Opium, go home now.
Right.
Well, so they knew. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Obviously that it was happening, but they weren't the ones doing it. They were giving the routes to take by their superiors. Now, those superiors, Scrubs Dude and Rob, they were legitimately trying to pawn it off as in a couple of rotten apples are doing this. And
but the pilots themselves were not in on it.
No.
It didn't seem like.
No, they were just doing what they were supposed to be doing, flying their
routes. They just flew what they flew.
But well, but then some of them had their own side hustles going.
Oh, yeah.
Right? Like Ryback had his gun running thing.
Major days off, you know?
Yep. That he was going to, it was going to be his nest egg, his retirement. He's, you know, collecting or buying or I couldn't even really get my head around exactly what it was he was doing. He had a stockpile of weapons.
He was just getting his weapon stash together for that final sale. Building his inventory.
He
was going to retire and move to
Thailand.
By the way, I think
Bangkok, baby.
They shot this in Thailand, I think. I'm not sure. Because I was trying to remember this because I was reading about the movie and Robert Downey Jr. said he had a miserable experience making this film in the country. And I want to say it was Thailand. I can't remember the country they shot in. He said he'll never go back there again. He won't make a movie there. He won't travel there. He's like, this is it. It was that miserable for him that he will never, ever, ever go back. Clint, you going to look it up?
For those that are listening at home, why don't you look it up too? Let us know here.
You'll beat us.
You see why we have an email called "This Show is Trash," because I didn't even do the basic thing of writing it down. Like I looked it up, I read it, I said, "Oh, that's interesting," and then I brought it up, knowing full well I didn't know what it was.
Didn't commit it to memory.
That's right.
I think it was Cambodia.
So it's terrible. Maybe it was something that was one of those.
Part of it was filmed in L.A.
That's right. Yeah, we know that. Part of it was filmed in Los Angeles. Essentially,
Thailand, London, Los Angeles.
Thailand, there it is.
London, yes.
The
dense jungles of London.
So I was right, and I just wasted 3 minutes.
Thank you.
Thinking I was wrong.
To make sure we had the information dead on.
Yes, okay, perfect. So essentially, they established that, kind of what we were just talking about this whole drug thing, right when Jack and Robert Downey Jr.'s character, Covington, take their first flight together, where we know Song has just loaded a bunch of drugs onto their plane. And this is the kind of the part of the movie where Jack is freaking out about the golden BB the whole time. When the flak starts popping up around them, he starts to panic and become very... what's the word I'm looking for?
Distant.
Not only distant, but
catatonic.
Useless.
Yes.
Useless. That's the word I'm looking for. Just became totally useless. Totally shuts down.
He was dissociated.
Yep. I knew it. I'm done.
That's it. And so the plane is getting shot down. And this is actually one of the only lines that I wrote down in my outline that I loved is they're going down and they put the Mayday out and Ryback catches the Mayday. And General Song, knowing full well that that's a bunch of drugs, doesn't want anybody else to show up there.
Yeah, right.
So they call everybody off.
Yeah.
And Mel Gibson says, Wild Dog to base, F off.
Yeah. Base to Wild Dog, do you copy?
Right?
Wild Dog to base, F off.
And I was like, that was actually really, really great.
That's one of my top lines as well.
I use it daily.
Simple, to the point.
That's right. But
maybe that's where I got that phrase from.
This is a B-123 also?
C-123.
Yes. Okay. This is when we have what I wrote down as the never-ending plane crash.
I wrote that down too. The longest plane slide ever.
You could almost imagine the cables towing that thing across the runway, but they were cut out well.
But longest they had to knock everything off to set it up for later in the movie.
That's right.
Exactly.
Man,
but they didn't have to do it, have it spins and parallel park over here and this wing fall.
I feel like if it had been 10 more seconds, we would have been into like airplane territory, like as far as what I mean, airplane, like the spoof movie, right? Like it would have been like they would have added, you know, them sipping coffee in the cockpit while it was like spinning around.
Well, that's the Air America on Ice version.
This thing comes down, a plane gets ripped off, the other plane gets ripped off.
Those are wings.
The wing gets ripped off. Then the tail gets taken out.
Yep.
Then it's spinning. It's still going. It gets into the trees, into the brush. It's still going.
It's going 1/4 mile an hour the whole time.
how fast was this plane going when it touched down?
On a gravel runway. I mean, can you imagine the friction? Why, this thing doesn't have a heat shield. The bottom of the thing's burning up by the time.
Well, that's what I'm saying. The whole thing is going to be like a Flintstones plane by the time that thing was done. The whole bottom would be gone. Oh.
They didn't have planes in the Stone Age.
In the Flintstones, they didn't have microwaves either. They just had dinosaurs inside of a box and called it a microwave.
That'll happen.
The dishwasher was like a pterodactyl inside of their under their counter. Okay. They also didn't have cars.
Wow.
In the Stone Age. I'm talking about the Flintstones. Okay.
Oh my God. Now would the Flintstones movie be a good one for the Batman?
Oh gosh, yeah. Well, especially because Steven D'Souza wrote
we
have to, because we started this podcast off with two D'Souza movies right in a row, Street Fighter and Hudson Hawk.
This is pretty much the D'Souza podcast by now.
Well, it was for a little D'Souza bit, and then we got away from it, so we got to get back to the D'Souza train at some point. We do have Beverly Hills Cop 3, which is another D'Souza movie, on the draft board also. So.
Love it.
So, yeah, so the general shows up after they've crashed, and...
go home now.
That's right. They just take the drugs and leave the pilots.
Yeah. Yep.
Right?
Yep.
And
kind of a tight squeeze in here. Let me help you with that.
Right. Like, dude, it's like obvious immediately that they're not going to take you home.
Yeah, right. He was hopeful.
He's really hopeful.
Still, he hasn't gotten like
he's not
Louse pilot weird yet.
No. No.
He's still naive.
Yeah, he's still naive.
Right.
But they take off, but then Mel Gibson's character shows up right as some gorillas. Not the animals, but the guerrilla fighters are showing up with guns.
Yep, moving in on our
to
boys.
To kill all of them. And so he picks them up in a chopper, which then immediately is shot down.
Well, there was a plane and Mel Gibson in the chopper.
Right.
So two get in a plane, and then Robert Downey Jr. gets in the
chopper. Right, Jack gets away in the plane, yep. And then so it's just Mel and Robert Downey Jr. that get shot down.
It's what we call a plot setup.
Because what they do is they end up upside down or nose down in a helicopter.
Another great moment coming.
Great moment, because they purposely unseatbelt and fall what seems to be 50 feet.
Yeah.
To the jungle floor.
But here's the part of that is hilarious. It's like, I don't want to unbuckle first. I definitely don't want to unbuckle second. Well, we'll flip for it. Flips a coin, throws out. Well, somebody's got to go check.
That was funny.
That was good.
But, man, I don't know that was the best course. Was that the best course of action to get out of that helicopter?
Absolutely, because yes. Right after that, it was shot up right through the cockpit. So I say absolutely that was the best course of action. You do not sit in a plane.
That was the only way they're getting out.
I guess. But with two broken necks would probably be the most likely scenario.
I maybe hang on to the plane for a moment, unbuckle, and then like drop feet first.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah. But yes.
They're just like, no, we're going to crash through the glass that was still... You know, there.
Semi-attached.
It's broken.
Broken glass. We're going to slice ourselves to bits, fall 50 feet onto our heads on the jungle floor.
And right before that, you know, the back and forth. You say no chemistry. I say it's intentional indifference.
Who said no chemistry? The guy in that.
No, he's... Oh. At the beginning, he says Mel Gibson and Downey Jr. had zero chemistry through the movie. But, like, legitimately, while they're doing that and he's getting shot down, Robert Downey Jr. is going through the checklist and, like, hey, this is bad. This is bad. And, you know, Mel Gibson just like, yep, yep, yep. Gearbox is losing pressure. Yep. Like, he's aware. Yeah, we're screwed. Got it. Check. Done. I mean, it's, I don't know. I think it's just the back and forth between the characters.
Yeah, like I said, there's moments in the film that are enjoyable, just none of it ties together in a meaningful way. That's my issue with the film, right? And that's why I think it only works as a hangout movie.
Yeah.
You know, or as you said, more like a faux documentary where it's like just spending time, this is what it was like to be in this outfit of crazy pilots, right? And that's kind of it, which I don't know if it makes for a super satisfying film experience, but it can be enjoyable in moments.
According to some people I know that read the book, that's why some people hated this movie when it came out.
Yes.
Wasn't real. Wasn't what the book was, even.
Didn't tie to the book. It was made more like a buddy comedy than the book actually was.
Right. So you had you read the book before you saw it or after?
I don't remember.
Okay.
I just remember reading the book. You know, I was, we were like 11 or 12.
Yeah. So if you had to give it a percentage of, like, it was 50% true, 50% BS. What would you put the ratio of this film at to reality?
For versus the book or versus, like, aviation versus...
No, versus the book, like what happened in Air America.
The stories were a little bit different, but I'd say it was about 40% the same.
Oh, really? Okay. Yeah. That's pretty good. I would have assumed it would have been, like, 10% reality, 90% BS.
They took location and title and go.
Yeah, right. But that's interesting to hear. That's interesting. This is the moment where the guys essentially are wise now to what's going on with General Song. Now they've seeing him come and get the drugs off the plane and Robert Downey Jr. I mean, I think Ryback already knew what was going on, but like,
I got the sense he did.
Yeah. But like Robert Downey Jr. at this point has kind of got fire in his eyes for the rest of the film towards this whole drug operation. As a side note here, they're at this point, they're kidnapped by these, like the East Asia version of the Beverly Hillbillies or, you know, whatever these guys are. They're, guns are
flintlock
that's what I'm saying,
in the rain in the jungle. That's probably not a good place to have flintlock weapons in the jungle.
I mean, if it's all you got,
it's
better than nothing.
It's at least a club.
Mel's able to charm his way out of it. My point is this is just another part of the movie that ends up really going nowhere and serving no purpose. They have this big moment where everyone's out searching for them and they're lost and they're kidnapped, and then the next morning they're just like back at the meeting with the rest of the pilots, like, you know, nothing ever happened.
Yeah.
And so the whole point of this was just to set up a buyer for him for his weapons so that they could have that point at the end of the movie.
Potentially.
Pretty much.
But then it wasn't even itself really necessary. They could have just said, I'm finally gonna unload these weapons, and we didn't even need to know who the buyer was gonna be.
But you don't have anything else to fill the time with, because as we know, there's no other plot.
Because it's a weak script. This is what I'm saying. You're proving my point.
But I'm not proving your point. It's still awesome, regardless of that problem. Yes, okay, I will acknowledge that you see a problem with it. I don't see it as a problem. I see it as still awesome. Okay. I've seen plenty of movies with plots that suck balls.
Very true.
A plot is not necessary if the movie's good.
All right, here's another thing that sucks balls about this script is... It takes one of the best characters in the movie, Jack Neely, and kills him off screen.
Yeah.
Off screen.
I didn't like that.
Yeah.
He just kill him off screen without the audience getting the, you know, the satisfaction of knowing what happened or getting to experience it or seeing it or have that emotional payoff or anything. Just like, oh, just wheel him in on a gurney.
It was on a recon mission.
Terrible writing. From a writing standpoint, that's terrible.
Yeah.
Just flat out terrible.
Maybe that was intentional.
Intentionally bad writing just to piss the audience off?
Yes.
I can't win with you two, honestly. I can't know how many points I can point out and bring up.
It's the same
and you're
point.
Just like, that was awesome. I don't know what you're talking about.
You only had one point, though.
This is terrible. It's terrible writing.
Think about it.
I'm
showing you many examples.
No, I mean, he's one of the likable characters in the movie.
Yes.
And gone.
Just gone.
It just shows, you know, gone in a heartbeat.
Oh my gosh!
I don't know. I think out of all the pilots, he's probably the only other one that's really followed, you know, part of the story the most, right?
Right.
And then let's just knock him off. We'll just reel
what
him
are
back
you gonna watch?
Outside of
watch the Nikon first time he got shot at. Let's watch the first time he got shot at. Now he's flying recon. He's by himself in the plane, just out looking and hoping for a sound back.
But show it anyway.
Showed. But now, okay, he starts getting shot at, and he just ignores the fact that the world exists, and nobody snaps him out of it, and he crashes into the ground.
Well, then show that so that the audience can make that connection, right? I mean, besides the two main characters, he's the only one you've spent any time with any character development on. See, and then you're just going to... Done.
The best part is you can imagine however you want.
Not how film works.
It's like a choose your own adventure.
No. This is the moment I think that sends Covington over the edge. Robert Downey Jr.'s character decides at this point he's going to blow up the heroin plant.
Going to get him some payback.
Yet another issue that I have with the movie. He's supposed to be a civvy, right? He's a civilian.
Yeah.
He's able to make a timed explosive device.
That was cool, though. I'm with you. All right, he shouldn't know. He's just a pilot. He's just a pilot.
Right.
But that taping them together, pulling the pin, setting them over the burner, that was cool.
I'm trying to think back, though, too, because when they were reading his logbook, like earlier, was anything in that logbook set up there that might have...
If they did, they should have telegraphed it a little better.
Yeah,
right.
No, I mean, because it was only Bush flying and crop dusting, so I don't think so. Right. But
that's a pretty sophisticated timed explosive, and the fact he would have to
it was tapering simple,
for a civilian wouldn't know to do that, and then have to set it up over
now because I saw it in 1991 on a movie.
He'd set it up over a Bunsen burner and get out of Dodge.
Well, his lack of knowledge showed because it didn't work.
It didn't work. Exactly.
I want to know what chemistry class he was in. I mean, that was...
Well, when you have a low-grade explosive, which is a physical explosive. You know, we're not talking about fire.
Right.
And then you have the, like, fuel cans that were there for some reason. I don't know why they had fuel cans inside of the lab.
To run the generators.
Yeah. And then you had the Bunsen burner. Yeah. And the, you know, I mean, so, yeah, it really didn't work. But
it was just
it worked in that it exploded.
Right, but he didn't get away enough.
Drew attention to him, yeah.
And he knocked over stuff beforehand, took shots before it blew up.
That was one of the funniest things. Where he was like, it was the new guy. My guard saw him.
Running
like,
away.
Really?
Your guards died.
Your guards caught a half of a second glimpse of someone's back of their head, like from however far away. But whatever, we need the plot to know that it was him. We run through the fireball. We need it for the plot for them to know it was him. That's fine, whatever. But yeah, I think it's interesting. It was a good point that Mel's character, you know, showed him afterwards that really you've done nothing.
Right. You feel better now?
They'll be back up and running.
He blew up the table.
It took him almost 3 hours to get that place back up and running.
Yeah, exactly. And so he's put himself in the crosshairs at this point, and now they've needed a scapegoat. The governor.
Heads on platter.
The senator is breathing down their necks, essentially. And I like this about the senator, that he came off as a moron, but throughout the film, He kind of shows that he knows a little bit more and he's a little bit smarter than people think he is.
He got the gist that they were giving him the old mushroom treatment.
Yeah. What's the old mushroom treatment?
They keep him in the dark, feed him a lot of shit.
Fair enough. That's exactly. They were giving him the mushroom treatment. And so they're like, okay, this is going to be our guy. This is the scapegoat. We're finally going to, put our head on a platter, right?
Yeah.
And they load up this plane with narcotics. And him and Babbo, or, Robert Downey Jr. and Babbo are going to fly this plane. And immediately after takeoff, they call him in for a routine inspection.
Yeah.
Right?
I never heard of it.
Which was brilliant. I love that Babbo was there with him because if he's not, he flies right into that trap. Done. Dunzo.
Yep.
This, to me, was the moment of the film that I had a total identity crisis, okay? The whole movie, Babbo, good guy, is like the old grizzled veteran, right? And at one point he goes, I can't do this, man. I'm 42 years old.
Yeah.
I literally went,
I'm 42.
I took a second. I had put my hands on my coffee table, and I said, what?
I was like, I'm 42. I haven't done anything. I'm like, I'm 42. Have I done anything?
I was like, this guy is 42. This is the old guy in the movie, and he's the same age as me. I was like, what? There's no way this guy is 42.
He had some hard miles.
Well, those Saturday, was it? What'd they say every night?
Oh, yeah. How often do you guys go on a bender like this? This ain't a bender, kid. This is nighttime.
This is nighttime. Babbo is 42 was at the same time the funniest and scariest in the whole movie. That was the thing that stuck with me.
Well, and he was just like, there's no routine inspection. Goes back to whatever he's doing, coloring or whatever. He's coloring his sky, his puppies, whatever.
Yeah. He ends up covered in heroin.
Well, that's the flower.
The flower or whatever. Oh, that's right.
Flower.
That's
right.
In the flower sacks. Babbo comes through, and they zoom past the routine inspection and end up, as you said, now I'm going to ask you, Mel, because you said this was totally plausible.
Yes.
He has the brilliant idea because now they're flying a smaller plane.
Yep. Right.
This is the
Pilatus.
The crash that they had before with the C-123 with the tail knocked off, and so the fuselage is just open in the back.
Yep.
It's still sitting there.
Yep.
And so he has the idea to crash the plane inside the other crash.
Perfect plan.
You think so?
Yes. Absolutely.
It would work.
I thought it was actually pretty cool.
So remember, they cut their fuel. They only gave him enough fuel.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
So the wings were not full of fuel, which is why it didn't explode into a fireball.
Gotcha.
So there was no fuel leakage or anything because the tanks were empty.
Okay.
So when it sheared them off, those wings are not on there. Like, they can come off. You can take them off for, like those Pilatus. You can actually put two or three of those in one of those C-123s or a C-130.
So this is the fact that it fits inside of it's even legit.
Yes. Yeah. Okay. You could transport multiple small, like, 2- and 4-passenger planes inside of a large cargo plane.
Okay.
And we do it all the time for military purposes.
And I think it was perfectly reasonable to think that they would fly around and look around and just see the old crash and not mm-hmm. see them. I thought that was
right. yep.
totally plausible.
Except for the dust. There would have been tons fresh of dust in that area.
Debris,
yeah, maybe.
Debris. So they would have. And again, the big wing sections would have been outside.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say.
He just pulled a little like wing strut in. It's like, oh, let's get this out of the way.
Yeah, that's right. what I would think. They because they just sheared off the wings as they went into the fuselage. So Ooh. The wings that smaller right. plane are going to be outside.
All right, so they hide. Here's the worst part. I'm gonna lay it out here right now, okay? Because there's parts of this movie that I love. I think the movie is better than its rating. I don't think it deserves to be a 5.8. Okay,
agreed.
I'm not coming to Team Air America.
5.9.
I stand by my issues with the movie. Here's the biggest issue.
In this room, you're above a 50% rating. We are at a 50. That brings us up to like. 75, 70.
There is an unforgivable sin from a writing standpoint that this movie commits in this next moment, which it renders the plot of the entire movie pointless.
All right. Okay.
After all this hand wringing, the people they knock off to keep quiet, they finally get exposed to the senator, only for the major to be able to say, "You can't do shit to me," and that's just it.
Yeah,
because the president loves my.
That's right.
Ass.
So the what was the point of the whole movie? You're like, oh, we can't let the senator find out. Well,
right.
Like he could have found out in the first five minutes, and then you could have flooped the middle finger to the guy, and then that would have been it.
Why send the senator in at that point?
Well, so
why do any of it?
We're trying to hope that the senator would come back with a.
But if the guy's untouchable,
right?
Then none of it mattered.
But it would have helped. Politically,
no.
to be able to say,
there's
Senator
nothing
came, found nothing. No. There's nothing bad.
There's nothing
on.
You can say that would forgive a writing faux pas like this. It's you just took the whole plot and said all of it was pointless.
Can you
all of your subterfuge, all of your sneaking around, all of your
could you not see any value
all that
in
stuff.
Being able to not have to tell somebody that?
Like, but if you're above the law, so to speak, because you're in
right,
the,
but you don't want
in with the president,
you don't
what does it matter?
The power.
Right.
But he's in with the president.
Right. Just because you're in with the president doesn't mean you want to implicate the president to a senator who might be willing to cut his own throat and politically.
Well, they established very well at the end that the senator just said, they're like, duh, like nothing was going to happen.
Right,
like
you don't know that.
He wins. There was no point to any. It was all like
show. We do know it because at the end they said it. The major got whatever promotion or whatever else.
Right.
So
he was promoted. He was,
yeah.
Yeah, it's called F up, move up. It's the promotion system.
Well, that may very well be a military promotional system that I'm not aware of. But as far as a movie goes, and as somebody that's watching a movie, and you have an entire plot revolving around trying to hide something from somebody, only at the end for it to mean nothing, is a writing sin that's unforgivable. Unforgivable.
I still think it has meaning to try. I still think it would be of value to not have the senator know that, hey, you're in with the president. You would want to send the senator home with a warm, fuzzy feeling that everything's going all right. They tried to do that.
Well, sure, but...
Well, now I'm going to say, all right, we got nukes.
All right, well, look, that's fine. Maybe it would be... I'll even give you that. You go...
So there's still a...
Okay, yeah, it would be great if he just didn't know, right? But you wouldn't even try remotely as hard if it didn't really matter. I mean, they were talking like, "Oh my gosh, they're going to find out. They're going to. This is all going to end. This is going to." I mean, like they were wringing their hands like crazy.
Yeah, but they kind of leaked it out a little bit here or there too. I mean, they're over dinner and he says, "Yeah, we got a couple bad apples."
Right.
Rob, go whatever. You know, go figure it out. Go find out who it is.
But they go to great lengths to make it seem like it's not them.
Right.
Right.
Yes.
Why?
Because then if they have a fall guy, they could say they took care of the problem. It's over and done.
But that doesn't matter because he can't touch him anyway.
But you'd rather not.
But see, think about this. You're playing Monopoly, right?
You're not understanding the simple thing that you'd rather not have to go to your nuclear solution if you don't have to.
Right. You get that get out of jail free card. You don't wield that every turn. You hold on to that till you absolutely need it.
I don't agree. And even if that might be true in principle or in real life, we're talking about a film. We're talking about a movie that people are going to watch, and that from an audience standpoint, from you're trying to satisfy with a resolution of a satisfying resolution of a plot, that is not the way to do it. Regardless of whether or not in reality that might be something that's, you know, beneficial for the guy to do.
I'm not even this fired up about the 2 minute sliding airplane sequence.
It's not even about fired up. It's about, it's, you guys are talking about arguing from an argument of reality. And
I love you.
Right. You know, but from, I'm talking about from a film standpoint, from a script, from an audience standpoint, if you're having to watch this movie, you're sitting here for 2 hours subjected to this plotless flaming pile of crap.
Then here
we'll and then at the end, only to find out that none of it really meant anything.
Oh,
that's not satisfying. It's an unforgivable writing sin. Forget what would have worked or happened in reality.
Here's where we go back to. I think you look at these movies less for the actual entertainment.
That's not true. That's not true. I'm not even talking about from a production standpoint. I'm talking about from an audience standpoint, from just enjoying it. I sat there as an audience member and tried to enjoy this movie, and it's not satisfying when there's no resolution to what you've based the entire plot around. That's not about me saying, well, the way they made the film, you know, from a filmmaking standpoint, that it's absolutely the bones of the movie, the script itself was already a failure before they even shot the thing.
I'll disagree with that.
I disagree because I enjoyed it 100% all the way through. I did not feel like, oh, they got me. They screwed me over. I mean, at no time during that scene, it's like, all right, yeah, okay. So that takes care of that. And then they carry on. Now what are they going to do with all these guns and these people and the girl and all that stuff? And I continued watching and enjoying the movie. I never felt upset about it.
This episode brought to you by Uzi.
Like I said, we'll go down, we'll give you a Snickers. We'll
after this part in the movie, Ryback has decided that he is going to get out and he is going to sell off his cache of guns. At the same time that he's doing that, we find out that a battle has broken out between the guerrilla fighters and General Song's army at this refugee camp.
They found the poppy field.
They found the poppy fields. And so Ryback has this moment of crisis where he has to decide between his retirement and saving Nancy Travis's character, who he thinks is the only person he's showing up to save.
Yes. We got plenty of room. We'll put her in the back.
Well, but even before, I thought it was kind of interesting, kind of funny, before he's like, Robert Downey Jr.'s like, it's only five. Yeah, we're closer, but it's only 5 minutes. You know, it's 5 minutes. Not a big deal. Let's just keep going. Like, he's goading them into it.
Yeah. And when they get there, they realize that she's not leaving unless they take everybody.
Right.
Right. And so how many people can you even fit on a C-123? I mean, that's what they were flying, right? So
at least 65.
Looked like they had a lot more than 65 people there, but they essentially cram. He's got to make the decision, dump the guns.
Right.
Or save the hostage, not the hostages. the hostages.
Better movie all of a sudden. Yeah. Way better.
The refugees.
And you may not know this, but the C-123 was also in Con Air.
Oh, is that the same?
That's the same plane.
Same plane from Con Air. Okay.
So think of how big that plane was in perspective.
Yeah.
With the extra rooms and compartments. And
right. They made it out to be like this huge Titanic-sized aircraft.
Right. Well, he makes a decision to dump the guns, and then we're sitting here, and this is my theory about, you know, why they hadn't shot at the plane yet, because they have to wait for the absolute right moment for there to be an explosion for Mel Gibson to run away from. That's why.
So plot armor on the plane.
So he even hesitates at the end, like to turn. There's this moment where everyone's running and jumping on the plane, and he turns and he like hesitates for a minute, and it almost made me laugh because it was like he was waiting for them to blow it up so he could run away from the explosion, like within the film.
And again, fragmentation grenades do not cause secondary explosions. Fragmentation grenades.
Right.
Right.
Just saying. It's
still entertaining.
It is entertaining.
Yes. But they get away, and he thinks, well, my retirement is shot, but they're just going to sell the plane because the plane doesn't exist. That's right.
Doesn't exist. None of it exists.
Yeah.
And so they ride off into the sunset to live happily ever after in Thailand.
Right.
At least for a little while. They run some kind of lottery scam, apparently, according to the...
That's the other funniest part of the
postscript.
The postscript. You know, Robert Downey Jr. apparently has become some sort of...
Computer genius
where he's going all Office Space before Office Space and running some sort of lottery scam to pay pay Mel Gibson back for his guns.
I don't think it was I think he just used an eraser and a pencil to change his lottery numbers on the ticket. Hey, this is Tyler we're talking about.
And that was the movie. So at this point, it's time to give some awards to Air America. And so we're going to start, as we always do, with our Will Patton Award. Our Will Patton Award is the award we give out to someone that was in a supporting role, but that was really bringing the intensity and just going 110%. And I'll kick us off as you guys get your thoughts together on this. But for me, and I hopefully we're on the same page, but I'm interested to see what you guys think. I have Art LaFleur as my Will Patton Award winner, the guy that played Jack Neely.
Yep, absolutely. He would have gone higher if he survived to the end.
Right.
Yeah, I think I'm on the same boat. If he was in the movie more, he was like really the only other character out of the pilots anyway that they really developed.
Right.
And if he would have survived to the end, I would be putting him in my top three, but definitely Will Patton.
Awesome. Mel?
I actually went with Chanarong Suwanappa.
Was that the guy that played General Song?
No, that was Kwan, the kicker.
Kwan?
He's the guy who fell out of the plane and was dangling.
Oh, yeah.
I tell you, if you're like in your mid-40s, late-50s, I don't know where he was at. He was old. No, but
he was great.
If you're hanging out the back 42. Of the plane.
He probably was. He was probably 36 years old.
If you're being dangled at 250 miles an hour.
Yeah.
I mean, that's that.
That was climbing back up the rope.
Right. And he was that guy that was always there, just did what he was told.
Yeah.
You know, he was a good supporting guy.
No, he was good. He was good. So with three votes, Jack Neely will win. Art LaFleur will win the Will Patton Award with the honorable mention to, what was his name again?
Chanarong Suwanappa.
All right. Honorable mention to him. He was great. We'll move on to our other award that we give out, which is our Trash Can Full of Dirt Award, which is someone that's part could have been played by a trash can full of dirt. And this movie has no shortage of choices. So go ahead.
Mine here, the character in myself just felt like he was a piece of trash to me. So okay. I'm going to go with Rob Deal, Dave Marshall Greer's character there. Okay. Rob, the CIA intelligence guy. He just, in general, total trash, 100%. Okay. That first, is he dead? Really? Really?
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know. That guy was just a...
He didn't really bring a lot to the table.
Yeah.
Even from
that could have been anybody.
Even from a performance standpoint.
Anybody could have played those same stupidness a little better.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, no shortage for sure. I even thought about throwing Nancy Travis in here, but I like Nancy Travis too much to do that to her.
I don't think she did anything.
I don't know that it was
wrong.
Her fault.
She didn't
it wasn't
have
her fault. Just right. It's her character could have just been played by a trash. But I also went with Rob Deal, David Marshall Grant
okay.
on that. I think, it might have been better off putting a trash can full of dirt in there. Just tape the condom to it and
it would fit over it.
It probably would fit over
it. This episode, we have the Condom Full of Dirt Award.
That's right. Who's your condom full of dirt?
All right. So I originally went with Nancy Travis for Corinne Lindrow. But, I like her from other things. So I'm going to go with the Nightclub Singers. Okay. Wasan Udomayodin and Misak Nakarat. A horse with no name.
The fact that you took the time to go look up their names. I love it. You spent more time on that than they were in the movie.
Wasan and Misak, if you're listening, email the show at thisshowistrash@gmail.com.
Please do it. I had David Bowie as my not that David Bowie. There's another David Bowie.
The other David Bowie. The cool David Bowie.
The guy that played he was one of the pilots. He was the guy that played Weird Al's friend in UHF.
Yep.
Right? The dude that had like usually wore a bandana with all the hair coming out. Like every time he's in the movie, he had like two lines and he just was like this dumb look on his face. He added nothing to the movie at all. All of the other side character pilots, I feel like, contributed in some way, shape, or form. They could have had, like, instead of nine pilots, you could have eight pilots and a trash can full of dirt, and it would have been the same as having David Bowie in there. So, sorry, David. I love you, but not on this one. But I think we have two votes for Rob Deal, right? So, what was that character, the actor's name?
David Marshall Grant.
David Marshall Grant is our winner of the Trash Can Full of Dirt
Award. Good job, Dave.
Good job, Dave. And we're going to move on to our top three performers. So who were the people that you felt gave the best three performances? We're going to reverse it this time. We're going to start with Mel, and we're going to come around this way. Mel, top three performers in this movie for you.
Number three, I went with Art LaFleur as Jack Neely.
Okay.
Because really there were only three main characters in the film. I don't count the CIA dudes.
Okay.
Because they don't exist. Mel Gibson for number two.
Okay.
Solid, you know, but Robert Downey Jr., too damn hard.
Why did you give him number one? What was it?
It's too damn hard. Just that opening sequence.
Just that by itself.
I think it showed a little bit of growth in him through the movie.
Okay.
You know, I think he just did a wonderful job.
Okay. Fair enough.
You know, I think, well, there was no shortage of candidates for the trash can full of dirt. I think when you come to top three, there is a shortage of candidates. I'll go with Billy. I'll go with Robert Downey Jr. I thought, you know, he had his moments where he was Robert Downey Jr. in this.
Yeah.
You could kind of see it coming out.
I feel similar. Like, I pulled him down one because I expected more Iron Man.
Right. I expected. But I also was like, okay, but this is, he's young yet. He's still young in his career. But you kind of could see it coming out. So I had him three. I had Mel Gibson as Gene at number two.
Okay.
And then I had General Tsung, who's Bert Kwok, at number one. I thought General Tsung was, General Tsung.
All right.
So I got him.
I thought he did really good.
Yeah. I like the character.
Yeah.
I'm going to go with Tim Thomerson at three. That was Babbo. I like Babbo. Yeah. I really like
Babbo. Tim Thomerson was good.
You know, I liked his performance in there. The one they're coloring, like, man, you colored the sky. It looks stupid. You know, it's like, that's just fantastic. He had a couple of good things in there. And then I'm going to go with Robert Downey Jr. and then Mel Gibson.
As number one. Okay. I actually don't have Mel Gibson in my top three at all.
Understood.
I love Mel. He's one of my favorite actors, but I just felt like he was sleepwalking through this movie. Like, he was in some parts doing his Mel Gibson, his charming Mel Gibson thing,
playing a guy who was so overjaded by this? You know, I mean? At one point he even delivers the fact that we have no retirement plans. We're not even here. This isn't it. He's legitimately doesn't care. He's just going to get his stuff and just bail out. And he's done.
And that's like, why I kind of
thought what he played was over it.
He was just fed up. And that's why I get where you're coming from.
Yeah.
But I think that was the character was just, I'm just going to sleepwalk through this. I've got my gun running retirement plan here that he had to dump. But I think that was just the character. Yeah.
Well, at number three, I had the guy that played General Tsung, which is
Bert Kwok.
And great performance. I actually had Lane Smith at number two. It's the guy that played Senator Davenport. I really liked that performance. I thought he totally sold it. You know, the sheep in wolf's clothing, or the wolf in sheep's clothing, right? Where he was much more dangerous and aware than he presented. And I thought that was really good. And then I had Robert Downey Jr. at number one. I thought he just seemed like he was trying a lot harder than everybody else in the movie. And while it wasn't like classic Robert Downey Jr. stuff, I agree with most of what everybody said. I thought compared to everybody else in the movie, he gave the most overall best performance. So we have to answer the question, and I'm interested to see if opinions have changed at all, and I don't feel like they have, but is Air America a bad movie?
Yeah, you know, usually it's so easy for me to say, absolutely, it's a bad movie, but it was great. I honestly don't see why this is a bad. I understand. I acknowledge your point. I just didn't care. I mean, your opinion didn't cross to me ever while I was watching it first. And now after having heard your opinion, I'm still going to watch it. I don't care about that, I guess. No, I think it's a good movie.
Bad, definitely. Yeah, I don't, if it's on in the background somewhere, so be it. But you know, it's not like one of those bad movies where I'm like, oh, it's bad, but it's good sort of thing. I'll watch it again.
Right.
I'm kind of like, I'm like Mel Gibson. I'm just kind of like, whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I hear you. How about you, Mel?
It's not bad. Not everything has to be perfect to be good.
Not everything has to be good to be good?
Perfect.
Yeah, perfect. Does it have to be good to be good?
Wow.
I think this podcast has established that it doesn't have to be good to be good. It can be so bad that it's good. I think that's the biggest problem with this movie is it's not bad enough to be good. It is decidedly average. I think it's not overrated. I don't think it's underrated. I think it's properly rated.
Right where it's supposed to be.
5.8, right where it's supposed to be.
Above middle, barely.
I couldn't say good or bad. I think my rating is meh.
on a scale of to meh or meh to meh. Yeah, right.
Exactly. The other important question that we need to ask is, would Arnold Schwarzenegger make this movie better?
Ooh. Jack Neely.
And I think,
no,
absolutely, as Jack Neely, it'd be great.
No, Jack awesome. Neely had to be Jack Neely. No,
Jack Neely had to be Arnold. Jack Neely.
The Golden BB, be great.
I would
General
say
Sun?
That or the Senator, one or the other.
The Senator? The
Senator, that'd be fantastic. Yo, take my bag.
That's right. Listen, Arnold could have played Mel Gibson's character. He could have played Robert Downey Jr.'s character. He could have played the Senator.
I want to watch the recut with him as all of them.
He could have played Nancy Travis's character. Okay, it would have been a better movie. He played any of the parts. That's all.
Fair enough.
He's punching iguanas with a silencer.
That's what I'm saying.
He got a pillow on his hand, punching iguanas. Middle of the night.
He wouldn't have missed that shot on the iguana if he was Jack Neely, I'll tell you that. He'd say, hasta la vista, and then poof, be gone.
If I want to sit out at night and shoot iguanas on my miniature golf course,
well, I gotta
why
tell you
do
what?
I got to wake up the neighbors?
I tell you what, guys. Out of all the movies we've done, I would never have expected Air America to get the most heated out of all of the movies that we've ever talked
why you
about.
I got so angry. You just kept saying the same thing over and over, too. It's like, was completely irrational. Yeah. I loved it. You were so me.
Passionate about the writing, man. It's all about the writing.
And with that insult, we'll end it. So thank you for listening. Next week, we'll be going off the draft board for a special episode because we've got a guest joining us from Texas. So we'll be discussing the worst Western. Well, I don't know. Can we call it a Western ever made? Wild, Wild West. From Will Smith.
The Will Smith?
The Will Smith one.
I don't know. It's borderline, that's for sure.
It's a comedy. If you can call that a Western.
Yeah.
It takes place in the West.
It's a comedy, though, I think.
Yeah. Well, no, it's definitely a comedy. Is it an intentional comedy? I think it was an intentional comedy. Have any of you guys seen Wild Wild West?
Oh, yeah. I saw when it came out.
It was a coon
age. What, 98 or something?
Yeah. I have absolutely no memory of it. I saw it.
It's based on a cool Mo D song from the 70s, isn't it?
Is it really?
Wow, wow, wow.
Yeah.
I don't think that's what it's... I mean, there's a lot of backstory there, and I'm interested to dig into it because this, I think, has a lot to do with a lot of studio intervention and bad ideas being thrown together into a pot, and then they thought just by putting Will Smith into it, who was the golden boy at the time, that it would all work out and everything would be fine. And this was kind of famously his first big flop in his career after knocking out Independence Day and Men in Black.
See, but I think that gets back to when you see it, though, because I remember seeing it. Like I said, it was, 98 or something like that, 99, somewhere in there. It's like I saw it as a late teenager.
Yeah.
I kind of remember liking it, so it might be.
Yeah, I think the only reason I don't remember liking this movie is because I think my brother got into it before I did.
And loved it.
And he would watch it all the time.
Almost as much as Waterworld.
You're right. Like, he watched Waterworld all the time. So it was like always on in my house. And so I think I just developed a hatred for it for that reason.
Like Baby Shark.
I'm interested to go back and revisit it because I have no memory of the movie at all.
Just blocked it all out.
So I'm just going to go in clean and see what happens. And we'll go from there. But any final thoughts, guys, before we sign off?
Quotes. We missed a couple of great quotes.
Yeah, let's hear what you guys think about the little things.
We talked about the silencer.
Yeah.
We talked about Based a Wild Dog.
Mm-hmm.
We talked about the Bender.
Yeah.
General Lu Sung with the senator.
Yes.
In the back of the, they were in a helicopter plane.
Plane.
Sorry. Yeah. We made Marshall Key a very nice offer. And the general comes back. I know Marshall Key. Marshall Key is small time. He went to have liquor store in America. I'm not going to from being warlord to liquor store owner. So then, you know, Ryak gets in there with, why don't you tell the senator what you really want? Holiday Inn, Southern California, yeah. Own and operate.
I like that. Yeah, I like that part.
Yeah, that's good.
I like right when they're on the orientation flight and they go to land and they just done the Uzi thing. And, you know, the little commercial, but they land, like, there's guys in the woods. And Robert Downey Jr. jumps back in the plane, grabs the Uzi, and he starts to point it out. And he's like, oh, no, I know these guys. I'm like, don't do that, man. That's awesome. That's part of why Babbo got up in my list so hard. That scene there was hilarious.
It's good stuff.
Don't do that.
I think this was General Sung where he said, you take care of silly suitcase man, yes?
And then, of course, Major LeMond and CIA dude Rob Deal. No, Davenport runs the Center Prayer Group. With a guy like that, you don't bring up the subject of BJs. You wait for him to bring it up.
Yes.
The pause there just makes that line.
Yeah. That's right.
Yeah, I think I'm looking at my list here. Other things I wrote down. I think we covered some of them throughout the podcast here.
Well, now's your chance. If there's anything you
missed, there's one other one here. I think this was when they were responding to the at the end where Mel Gibson finally says, "Oh, okay, let's do it," and he finally radios back, "Yeah, we're going to respond. Sorry, I was in the phone booth changing clothes."
Yeah.
Is that supposed to be like a
Superman reference?
Yeah. Yes. Nice. Yeah. That's good.
So, see, overall, good movie.
Oh, yeah. You know what? You've totally changed my mind. This is the greatest movie that has ever been made I think I already said that. About Air America?
Air America.
There is no movie that surpasses this one.
Well, the adult version of this film is not bad either.
Oh, my God. Mel Vandy, everyone.
Just getting out of Dodge.
Murder in America is a true crime podcast that covers stories from all 50 states, including stories of mass shootings, serial killers, and lesser-known murders. Do you find yourself doing more research after listening to a true crime show? Well, Courtney and I used to do the same thing, and that's why we created Murder in America. Our podcast dives deep into each case. Our storytelling will make you feel like you're right there within the case with us, watching it all play out, and we do not shy away from the graphic details. If you're a fan of true crime, then listen to Murder in America on Spotify now.